Unity is strength and assured success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand. Divided we fall.
Welcome one and all to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live from the future, and the future looks bright, even though unfortunately the apocalypse has not been called off. It's in fact been delayed to October 21st. According to the guy who originally made the miscalculation, who has already beforehand made a miscalculation back in the early 90s. I'm sure you'll know what I'm talking about. That's right. Whenever you start spreading word about the apocalypse, everybody suddenly just loses their mind. And isn't that a great thing, you know, wonderful psyop to see how the public would react? And let's think about the public reaction for a moment. What did you do when you found out that the world was going to end? You didn't believe it, did you? And you just went along with your daily life. So suppose the boy who cried wolf type lesson were learned here, and that somebody said it was the end of the world and it actually was. Called up a friend of mine yesterday, and he's freaking out. Because some NASA scientists are also freaking out, according to him. That they found a massive planetoid that has now entered our solar system and will be here by September. And the magnetic field of this brown dwarf star will throw the Earth off its axis, crack the crust in half, spew all the aquifers and magma chambers onto the rest of the world, so it'll be like tsunamis of fire and water, massive earthquakes the likes of which mankind has never experienced, and only the people in the massive deep underground megacities will survive. And believe you me, big massive underground bases and megacities do exist. They're very well documented. Where do you think all this trillions and trillions of dollars in the global economy and all that debt went to? What do you think they bought with that debt? They bought their end-of-the-world bunkers is what. And they're not cheap. You know? It is very, very expensive to burrow 5 kilometers under the ground and build a facility large enough to sustain a population of 10,000 people for not less than 100 years. That is no thing that you can, you know, just gather around the family and try and scrounge together to get. No, you can't afford that. It's not going to happen. And the people who built all these bases, I'd wager, couldn't afford it either. So they just stole it from you. You know, isn't that really what happens when you got criminals running the show? Is that if they can't do something, they just take it. They just take it, okay? This is what was funny about elections, is that it doesn't matter who you're electing, okay? If they're a good person, they're going to be shouted down from inside of Parliament and shut down because you need House majority of any kind to get any sway. And this has been true of Ron Paul for a long time and Congressman Dennis Kucinich. They've been screaming their heads off about chemtrails and our constitutional liberties being taken off of us and all the wars that are unconstitutional. You know, they're just basically breaking out that the entire country has come to an end, already has come to an end, and it's no longer ruled by a government of, by, and for the people. It's of, by, and for international banksters who are satanic, psychotic, worshipping scum, the likes of which you would never leave your children alone with in a room for even 1 minute. This is the kind of people that you are dealing with here. And some people might call me a cynic because I say that, hey, when you're running for politics, you cannot win if you're running on a platform of truth. You know, I don't think that's cynical. I think that's very, very realistic. I mean, and if I'm wrong, name me one candidate that has become president who stood for truth and honor who didn't get shot. It doesn't, you know, it just doesn't happen. Therefore, the elections are a sham and a joke because who gets elected is who the electors choose. You can't choose it because you're not an elector. You're a voter, as the Greek said yesterday. And I was quite pleased to actually have them on because it was a very interesting point that he made. When you vote, you're only just having a say in something that you ultimately have no say over, okay? You're giving a possible representation of your word to a judge who could just make up whatever results he wants in the end and just say, well, you know, we rounded off to about this, blah, blah, blah. In New Zealand, if you're enrolled to vote, and this is why they push enrollment hugely, but leave it up to the parties to get you to vote, is because as soon as you're enrolled, your vote automatically counts by proxy. Even if you don't cast it yourself, it will be given instead as an aggregate by proxy to the remaining parties. Okay? This is the way that they're running the country. All of the people that are too lazy out there to vote, hey, you're voting anyway, and you're accomplishing just as much as if you did vote, except you know that you're just still playing a smaller hand in the destruction of the country as everybody else. The two other types of people want to vote for either more evil or the lesser of two evils. And just let me make it plain and clear. The leadership caste in this country, as they consider themselves to be completely separate from the rest of us, they don't care one iota what you think or what you do unless it compromises their goals. One person could perhaps smack a politician in public. They would actually love being hit in public if it helped to further their agenda of cracking down on people with a police state. They'd love it. And they'd milk the sympathy and all of that kind of stuff. You know, you just can't win with these people. They never learn. It's because they're psychopaths, okay? They don't feel human emotions. They have no depth to their character. There is no honor. And everything that they do that appears positive or nice and sweet and makes you want to trust them is a carefully constructed lie that they've told many times before and are well versed in it. They are professional manipulators. In my opinion, it is only a professional manipulator who would wind up getting themselves in any podium spot, much less a professional manipulator who isn't funded by enormous corporate banking interest donations that are happen to be anonymous or not. As the election funding in the United States would dictate, John McCain and Barack H. O'Barry, our Lord and Savior Satoru, got twice the amount of donations as McCain, literally twice the amount. And if you had a look at his contributors, they were the exact same giant corporate banks that funded McCain. Goldman Sachs, AIG, etc., etc. And it's the same every election. In New Zealand, we don't even have open election countings for donations as far as I've seen. Apparently anybody can just make donations anonymously And I've never seen a party reveal any huge donations, you know, something that would, like, tip the scales in their favour kind of thing. Who knows what the hell is going on in this country? It's probably a lot worse. Proportionally. It's the same system everywhere. And everybody, for some reason, they think that their election system's going to save them, that they'll be able to elect somebody who will kick out these banksters. It's like, no, it's not up to you. Not in the ballot box, anyway. Politics is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week profession. Period. Poly meaning many, and ticks meaning blood-sucking insects. Believe me, they work at 24-7, 360 degrees, corners of the globe. They are working at you in New York, London, the Vatican, Auckland, Canberra. Okay? They don't care what you've got to say. They will take all of your resources. They will take all of your wealth. They will take all of your freedom. They will take all of your children. And they will eventually take all of your lives. If you let them. We're at the point now where we've almost lost all of our possessions. And next, the only thing that we're going to have that they'll want is our time and our bodies. Okay? That's when you have to start getting into real physical kind of forms of slavery. How all the people that are graduating college and university these days with $30,000 to $40,000 debts will basically never be able to pay them off in any conceivable time period. Think about all the lost income. They would have been better off working at KFC. Honestly. Because that would definitely have been a double down rather than what they had to pay in student debt to learn copious quantities of information that are only singular theorists' opinions in a lot of cases about how the world really works. And you realize that as soon as you get out into the real world, that everything that you learned whilst you were in university becomes useless to you. Not a single time in my life have I found a practical use for any of the things that I learned in university. I learned more in a day on the street with a handy cam randomly bailing up people at a protest about journalism and media than I did at 2 years of effing university. I kid you not. If you want to be something, unless you need a degree in order to do it, I say eff it. Just frickin' do it. Because there's no better teacher than experience. Doesn't matter how good your frickin' lecturer is or how amazing these textbooks that cost you $200, $300 in some cases to frickin' buy, and you won't be able to resell them either because they make these tiny little adjustments in them each year. It's just a whole bunch of horrendous scumbaggery, the education system, the election system, and not to mention the business system. Oh, boy. Think about the gargantuan amounts of hierarchical structures that there are in business. There's the CEO, there's the board, there's the sales team manager, there's the salesman, etc., etc. This instant stratification. That's what our lives have become. Not instant gratification, instant stratification. That's what happens. Second you move into a company, boom, you're stratified as the lowest scum on the block, or if you're going there as the CEO, you are the top shop. This is how they want society to be controlled, where people aren't based on their skills or their personality, they're based on their qualification. It's just not something that agrees with me personally, which is why I won't ever tell anybody to do something. I really don't like to do that. I mean, I'll ask, but there's no obligation. Nobody has to do anything for me. That would just be cruel and usury-like. And that's not the way a free person is supposed to live either. One time when I was a bit younger, I was working doing labouring, right? And I had to pay commuting costs from a ferry from Waiheke Island to central Auckland. My commuting costs per week were $100. I was being paid $10.10 an hour for 50-hour a week, having not more than 2 hours to myself before I had to go to sleep again to get up in the morning at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And each 50-hour week, I managed to make myself $250. You know, explain that one to me. If anybody has any sense, there has to be this. All of the major, major companies and corporations and all the laws and all of these rules that we all have to follow, instead of just agreements, we've now got written agreements, we've got contracts, we've got all of this jargon that the average person doesn't have effing clue about, okay? Rather than just a verbal agreement, it's like, yep, you don't treat me like crap, okay? I'll work for you fine. And the other person agrees to not treat you like crap. And then you get along fine. Where is the harm in that? And if you have any problems or disagreements, you talk to each other and you think up things amicably, as opposed to, this is what the contract stipulates. Unless, of course, it's just a straight form contract, you know, like one page that anybody can understand. You know, with just the basics, it's pretty straightforward. But the problem is, in the cases of, say, insurance claims, and this is what we talk about, all this legal jargon and whatnot and how they use clauses and technicalities and all of that kind of stuff to screw you over. And that's what my opinion is that the entire reason why they have all these technicalities and specifications and long-form contracts and all of that kind of stuff is specifically to just find a way to screw you out of your money. That's my opinion, and I could be wrong. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And we'll be right back after the break. 402-237-2525 is the number to ring. The way it's going to be. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It is about a month away from the 4th of July, and I was wondering, in the modern context, what does Independence Day mean if you don't have any independence in the United States? If the country's all beholden to foreign banks, and you got to go through checkpoints everywhere, boss hog types. What are you celebrating? Apparently, Freedom Palooza is going to go off on Independence Day, though. I'll say that'd be something to celebrate. But I don't know. Maybe the whole idea of nationalism is all passé now, right? I don't think national no more. I don't think regional. I think local. Okay. I think the smaller the amount of power a leader can have, the better for all the people. All right. Like, nobody should be in charge of anything larger than, say, a small town, in my opinion, because that way it's really local, so if you do something wrong, people hit you up about it in the street kind of thing. That's what I reckon. That would probably be how you get some decent, accountable government, as if nobody had the ability to oppress more than one small, tiny section of people. You know, because that way you wouldn't get a whole group of tyrants all banding together to screw over your country, as is the case at the moment. Okay, and well, speaking of screwing over your country, I've got two special guests that I'd like to bring up to the airwaves here. Graham Kelly from goldnow.com and Mike Montagna, who is the inventor of the mathematically perfect economy. And the other day we had a person on about psychopaths and a person on about celestial, well, basically being able to tell what kind of personality traits you can possibly portray based upon the year and month of your birth, you know, the alignment programming, essentially, you know, scientifically done, supposedly. And you kind of look at it and you think, it's very interesting having these two different points of view going over each other. And what I wanted to do with these two guys is that one of them's a gold trader. And he's trying to have an online bank where you can trade digital gold currency. And I think that the whole idea of digital gold currency... Oh, and by the way, guys, if you're listening in at the moment, you can call into the show. 402-237-2525 is the number to call. And that's 402-237-2525. And when we think about the whole currency collapse situation, my mind instantly gets cast over to the Federal Reserve and the systems like it that are in places and countries all around the world. And more or less, this Federal Reserve system, each and every country that winds up getting infected with its monetary policy, just winds up turning into a fascist dictatorship of some kind. You know, it was one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto. You know, can you look it up? Central bank. You don't need to have central banks, man. Least of all, private ones. And what happens when we talk about that? You know, well, let's say we walk into a grocery store or something like that. We start talking about how foreign banks are taking over the country. Well, what's the poor shopkeeper going to do? Is he aware, or does he know anything about this, or what? But it's a strange turn of affairs when you try to reveal to people that yes, the central plank of the Communist Manifesto is what rules your country, and that's why it's one of the central planks. It's a pretty dangerous state of affairs in either case. And we have a caller on the line. I believe it might be one of my guests. You're on the air, mate. Welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show, area code 213. Can you hear me? Apparently not. Anyway, planks of the Communist Manifesto, I was saying. It comes to mind that, well, I live in a very socialist country. Okay, New Zealand, you know, by means is socialist. We get our free health care, and anytime you get sick from work or something, or if you have an accident, you wind up getting taken care of by the state. It's not too bad, I guess. Let's go to my special guests now. I've got to unmute them. Okay, gentlemen, I think you're on the air now. Welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Thanks, Vinny.
Thanks, okay. Vin. I'm Mike Montagna here. You got me, too.
All right, excellent. Well, that works fine, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
we're all laughing because Vincent has started a scrap here, I think, maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know, you were talking about Bitcoin. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to have kind of a discussion about currency and its effects on us. And there's a lot of alternative currencies and things like that coming out there, and a lot of people are taking them on. And so what I've brought on is the inventor of the mathematically perfect economy and a gold trader to discuss it. Mike Montagna, could you just give a brief bio about yourself so the audience can familiarize with your expertise?
About myself. And then well, actually, way back in 1968, I developed a mathematic proof of a singular monetary prescription for solving the categoric faults of any prospective monetary thesis, which in the long haul amounts to just this: an eradication of interest and an obligatory schedule of payment at the rate of consumption or depreciation of the related property, which retires principal as it's paid. That is, we do not borrow money from banks. Banking systems merely publish evidence of our promissory obligations to each other and first obfuscate this into a falsified debt to the banking system, which gives up no lawful consideration. The real creditor is paid in full. And then for merely absorbing the negligible costs of publication, they impose interest as if the principal were their property. And this forces us to maintain a vital circulation by perpetually reborrowing interest and principal that we pay out of the general circulation as a subsequent sum of debt, which is increased above the prior sum of debt by so much as periodic interest, until eventually we suffer the present terminal sum of debt across the world. So, in part, this theory invalidates any proposition of a gold standard because it's mathematically impossible to maintain a one-to-one relationship between a finite quantity of anything as opposed to a dynamic varying quantity of industry and commerce.
But, of course, that does mean that gold still retains its value, but it just shouldn't be the standard for what
sure,
money is valued at.
Exactly. But what it means is gold would only achieve its rightful value in such a system because, in effect, a gold standard really requires the entire volume of gold in the world to still offer a minuscule, deficient, deflated circulation, which can't sustain all our industry and commerce. So, in effect, you actually have an artificial demand for gold under a gold standard, which in effect largely prevents us, from using gold for other useful purposes. But nonetheless, the value of gold doesn't reach its rightful peak under a system such as we have now because this system, in multiplying artificial indebtedness in proportion to a circulation, inherently dedicates ever more of the circulation to servicing debt rather than affording the rightful
price. Well, so therefore it services the population to be debt slaves rather than owners or more tenants rather than the owners. And Graham as well, I'd love to you to just introduce yourself and do your website and all of that kind of stuff for the audience.
Sure. excuse me. My name's Graham Kelly. I'm a permanent traveller. I travel the world on a permanent basis. I have an exchange business called goldnow.st, that's Sierra Tango, and I also own goldnowbank.com. Bank is spelled BANC.com. And by the way, Mike, I do agree with you. I think you're right. But frankly, I would rather have my wealth stored in gold than fiat currency. And, you know, I'm not espousing the gold standard. I just...
Mm-hmm.
Trust in gold. I just trust in gold.
Cool. Then
I trust
both
in paper.
Then we can both get off the phone now and let Ben carry on. I largely agree with you as well then, Graham. The gold standard always has failed as opposed to political claims that are being made by the Tea Party and the Ron Paul advocates and all that over here. But that doesn't mean that gold doesn't have some value. And, of course, The only fine point I'd correct you on is fiat currency. Generally, the flaws that are being blamed on fiat currency, the arguments never address the fundamental obfuscation of the currency, which is the whole thing that's wrong with it. Doesn't matter if it's paper, gold, silver, whatever we create the evidence of our promissory obligations on, suffers the fault so long as they're obfuscated into this falsified debt to the banking system, subject to interest, which forces us to maintain a vital circulation just so that we can continue servicing the initial debts. And this borrowing back into circulation of principal makes it mathematically impossible to pay down the sum of debt, and the borrowing of interest back into circulation, of course, increases the sum of debt by so much as periodic interest on an ever-escalating sum of debt, which means that the sum of debt even escalates at an ever-escalating rate to terminal failure. But that isn't...
I think we both agree that the system that's currently in place all around the world is actually flawed. You know, there's a problem with it.
Terrible flawed, exactly.
And by the way, I haven't had the pleasure of looking at your thesis. I'm very keen to look at it. And Vinny, thank you very much for throwing me in the deep end here with Mike, but you know,
you're
I'll
really
go and have a look at Mike.
You're evidently on the same track to the truth. And I agree, gold has value. In fact, it's a funny thing that people have certain people who are sort of tunnel visioned types have immediately stood up against a proposition of perfecting the economy, thinking that their value of gold is going to go all to hell. Well, it could possibly, I would say, under repaired economy, that is, an establishment of solution, it could achieve maybe a higher value than it even is now. But nonetheless...
Well, as you say, it's all relative, but all I'm aware of is that 1 ounce of gold in 1900 will buy the same amount of purchasing power that you have in 2011. So it's never been an investment, as far as I know. It's just a wealth preserver. And
right, but there's not enough around to preserve all our wealth, so we really need to look beyond that, and even for the state.
But it's only the 1 or 2% of us that will eventually end up on top of the heap, because
the
people who own gold and silver, and silver as well.
I don't want Ben to say anything.
Well, I was just going to say, in the practical sense, you know, it's like the economy at the moment is the Titanic of debt, and and instead of a life preserver, you've got a wealth preserver to throw out to you, you know. But eventually, you're still going to die in the cold sea if you don't have guns to protect it. That is. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are Mike Montagna and Graham Kelly from GoldNow.com. And we'll be right back after the break.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief.
Welcome back.
There's too much confusion.
Oh yeah,
I can't get no relief.
Oh Jimmy, you can't get no relief, can you, boy? That's pretty sad, you know, especially when you die of an acid overdose. My very special guests are Graham Kelly from goldnow.st. Stands for sticky, like sticky gold, and Mike Montagna, the creator of the Mathematically Perfect Economy. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, thanks, man.
Okay, now, we wanted to talk about, and also, ladies and gentlemen, the lines are open, so if you have a question about the economy or gold or something of that nature, now is the time to call 402 237-2525. 402, that's the area code, 237-2525. Okay, now let's talk about, we've gone over the gold standard. We know that gold's valuable, but in the modern context, how much is the gold market actually manipulated? Because as far as I know, the World Bank and IMF have huge gold reserves, and whenever they want to keep the price down, they just flood the market with it.
You want to handle that, Graham? I mean, I'll fill in behind you if you want.
Okay, the IMF are actually broke, Vinny. They've got no gold at all. They've got GLD, they've got paper gold, they've got heaps of that, but they don't have the real metal. So they are broke and absolutely broke. And I think you can actually find that on their website. The IMF are broke. They're just... What they use is when they go into when they do bankster occupation. Recently, they went into Ireland and they did the same thing, but they used the assets of Ireland as the collateral for the loans. So, and they're doing that in Greece as well. They're trying to take over all the income producing stuff, like Parthenon and all that stuff, good stuff, all the stuff that makes money. They want to take that over and use that as collateral for the loan that they want to give the Greek government. It's just crazy.
Imagine that, using the Parthenon as collateral to give the Greek government evidence of its own debts to itself, obfuscated to a debt to the IMF. I mean, that's correct. One of the greatest crimes in history.
Well, so I don't think it's the greatest crime in history, but it's certainly up
there. No, across the whole world it is, though.
Oh, yeah, this Arab Spring uprising that we're seeing all across the Arab countries and North Africa, it's all to do with the same problem. It's not a Muslim problem, and it's not a Christian problem, and it's not anything other than a banking occupation, the banking terrorists, which is what they are. And what they do is they take over countries now. They used to take over businesses, but that's not profitable enough anymore. They want to take over countries, and they're doing it. And I feel sorry for the dictators. My God, you know, these guys, these dictators, they're like babes in arms compared to the tactics that the IMF Oh, my God.
It's tough to be a dictator these days, man.
They're victims. That's what they are. They're victims of the bankster occupation process. And, you know,
I think a lot of them actually are actually cultivated with the so-called financial system. I get a lot of inside information on very, very important financial deals going down around the world. And the corruption is incredible that I hear about. Now, there aren't many times that I can actually verify stories that are passed on to myself. But occasionally something crops up which validates these credible stories which fit the pattern of banking to a spectacular degree. And largely what I'm saying is that political authorities, officers, who we may think are good guys somehow, actually are stand between vital financial deals going down. I mean, we could have had green energy across the world to this day, which would have weaned us to a very substantial degree already of oil if it weren't for political people who have been administration after administration standing in the way of major funding deals going down. It's not even their money. The money can't even be brought into our country, for instance. And they are purported to have their hand in the pot to such a degree that multi-trillion dollar deals are most largely divided up among the politically corrupt who are denying us representation. One such case where such a story was validated to me recently appeared in Russian intelligence material, that a story that I'd heard almost a year ago in great detail, such a thing as you couldn't even utter, people wouldn't believe you, you wouldn't want to risk your own credibility claiming, hey, these things are awry. But this very report surfaced in a Russian intelligence site online, and it was amazing the correspondence to the reports that I've been given. But, you know, this goes on and on and on. I mean, many years ago, I tried to help save Argentina from the IMF, and of course the IMF maintains, you know, once it impoverishes a nation to the greatest extent plausible, it prevents that nation from truly ever recovering. To whatever degree it's allowed to recover is small in relation to what recovery we would realize by adopting true monetary solution, that is, eradicating all these debts by refinancing them under mathematically perfected economy, counting all prior payments of interest instead toward principal. This alone would resolve most of the world's debt. And then, of course, paying and retiring principal at the remaining rate of remaining consumption of the remaining value of the property. In any case, country after country after country across the world is let's say, held in a disadvantaged state by a system which, as I explained earlier, can only multiply debt in proportion to a circulation perpetually and even inherently at an escalating rate. Now that we've reached a terminal sum of debt across the world generally, I mean, even countries which are not, which have begun the finite lifespan at a later time, such as China, for instance, are jeopardized by the failure of the rest of the world, such as will escalate the failure of the system even in China if we don't fix all this across the world. So,
We are actually fixing it, Mike. Let me tell you what we're doing. We're all going grassroots. We're doing our bit for, you know, health and wealth. The main thing is that none of us want to be cannon fodder for governments. So what I'm espousing is that people use their resources where they're at. Like, this is literally grassroots stuff, where you find out who's in your community, find out the skill sets available, and then start living your life and avoiding the government. It's not that difficult to do. You know, you don't have to be subject to some crazy politician. I feel sorry for those soldiers in the U.S., you know, send off to Afghanistan and other places to fight these crazy wars. And I'm not against having a military. I think a military is necessary. But as Ron Paul says, why wasn't war declared in Congress? You know, these are issues.
That's definitely an issue. And I side with you perfectly well myself there as far as our military is concerned. Yes. Unfortunately, we still need one in today's world.
There's not unfortunate about it. We do need a military to keep us safe from, you know, foreign invaders or every country.
What was it? There was a great anarcho-syndicalist uprising in Spain that went along quite well, and same with France. But they both wound up being taken out by military invasion, okay? And that's the thing. It doesn't matter how lovey-dovey your society is, unless you've got some hard grunts and boots on the ground to defend it, it's going to be taken from you.
I agree.
So, my point that was... That may be the case until those hard grunts and boots on the ground realize that once they prevail over those who advocated solution, they've denied solution to themselves, which is a far grander thing than they hope to live under, serving whoever is the dictator or figurehead or whatever. What I meant by unfortunately is that I certainly expect that one day soon, perhaps, especially if we resolve these monetary issues, because what's the unrecognized ruling elite has long been the banking system.
And we'll be talking about this more after the break. And my very special guests are Mike Montagna, the creator of the Mathematically Perfected Economy, and Graham Kelly from goldnow.st. If you want to be able to trade an online gold, go to goldnow.st. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be back in a moment.
Women and children, frontline, log on, tune in, stand and be counted, wounded, stationed in the belly of the vulture, watch your back, there's no civilians, women, children, frontline, listen, consider this a distant, early warning, the fire's imminent, pollution, gathering dust particles, funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation, true fed, check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question. Like, why the hell did we let foreign banks loan our own money to us and then agree to pay them back?
actually, even more technically correct, what they're doing, Vinny, is they're loaning our own promissory obligations to us, as if we should borrow our own contracts to pay at some future time for production which is acquired from the real creditor who gives up the property in return for the promissory obligation. So, indeed, it is one of the most preposterous things that any intelligent society should be subjected to this. But if, no matter the country, wherever you investigate this across the world, you find that these banking systems were imposed upon us without public assent, without ever even in history offering an argument which could possibly truly justify them. You know, about the most prominent argument you would ever hear is that who would loan us money if it wasn't subject to interest, as if the bank is risking some loss of rightful property. But this isn't true at all. What actually happens is all money comes into existence when we contract to fulfill a promissory obligation, which natural obligation. Since the real creditor is paid in full and denied interest by the banking system, is to pay and to retire principal from circulation. Paid principal is like a fulfilled IOU. It's not the rightful property of anything. It no longer represents anything of value. So that the banking system launders all principal into its possession is enough of a crime itself that we should all be up in arms against it.
But yeah, I mean, who says that banks haven't got any principles? They got heaps of them because they stole them.
Actually, when my kids come to me and they say, Dad, we need $10,000 for a car, I dream about getting that $10,000 back, let alone interest on it. And, you know, what I do, I give them $10,000 in cash, or I, you know, co-sign the note, or generally I don't co-sign the note. I just give them the money. So if I actually got 1% return on my money, I'd be very darn happy. Or actually, even just getting the $10,000 back sometime would be just like a beautiful concept.
Well, Mark Twain said pretty much the same thing. He said he wasn't concerned so much with the return on his money as the return of his money.
Fair enough, too. I can relate to that. I've got 9 children. They're all looking to buy cars and houses, and, you know, Dad's got the money. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway. What I don't do is I never deal on the basis that I'm a banker. I deal on the basis that I'm a person. So what I have, even though I know that if Vinny goes and buys a house, very expensive $1 million house in Auckland, when he gets the loan from a bank there or a whoever, they generate that $1 million loan out of thin air. In other words, and then they add the balance of that $1 million house to their bottom line, and it's like the whole thing's a rort. You know this word, Mike? Rort? It's spelled R-O-R.
Right. I like to stay away from this out of thin air expression because, right. In truth, you see, if we resort to that, which has been popularized by Ron Paul, of course, but if we resort to it, we prevent ourselves from understanding what, in fact, actually transpires. They don't
Hang on,
create the money.
Wasn't the money created out of thin air?
No, it's created on our promissory obligation. In other words, when $100,000 is issued into circulation to pay for a $100,000 home, you go to a peripheral bank, which interfaces with the people and interacts with the central bank. And what happens is, you sign a contract to accept $100,000 debt.
So you're basically, the $100,000 loan is against the promissory note. I understand that.
No. In truth, it's not against the pro. If it's against the promissory note, it's a debt to yourself. In truth, is an obligation to pay and retire principal from circulation, because the real creditor is paid in full. The person that provides the $100,000 house is given the $100,000. So all the banking system does is it intervenes upon you, the issuer of your $100,000 promissory obligation, and the real creditor. The banking system pretends to be a creditor, but it gives up nothing of value, no lawful consideration whatsoever, and all it does is translate your promissory obligation into a uniform representation of it, which we call money. And it obfuscates that, nonetheless, into a debt to the banking system. What principal is repaid belongs to the banking system. And so for across the world, the general numbers work out to something like this. It costs approximately $2 to issue $100,000 into circulation, regardless of the currency or country. And so for the banking system absorbs this $2 cost to issue evidence of your $100,000 obligation to pay and to retire principal, but instead of retiring the principal, the bank considers it its property when it's paid, though it gave up nothing of lawful.
Yes, I understand that concept. Yeah, the bank puts it on the bottom line of their housing portfolio, I guess.
And this
increases the net worth of the actual bank, which is like fraudulent, I think.
Oh, yeah. And so this part of the obfuscation of the currency is itself an outrageous crime against humanity. But
there's actually one more thing, too. If that system wasn't in place, how then would Vinny and I and you buy a $100,000 house without that banking, interaction? So
Simple. Instead of going to the banking system,
I want to buy a house, and you're just about to tell me how to do it without going through the banking system.
Right, exactly. What we have to do, we have to realize that this obfuscation has never been justified, and the banking system, in truth, owes us a huge debt for the crimes it's committed against us.
Oh, they won't admit to that, though. They won't admit to that, and certainly there's no.
They don't have to admit to it because we're the validators of that crime. You know.
So how are we going to get justice?
Well, okay. So let's proceed with that answer. So the issue is that the banking system doesn't serve us. So we have to form an equivalent of the banking system in that it must serve at least.
Are we talking about then our financial community that you said that doesn't work or couldn't work?
No. The reason that I said that these alternate currencies don't work is because The circulation at large, the predominant amount of it, but it doesn't even matter that it's the predominant amount of it, but yet a predominant amount of the circulation remains this obfuscation of the currency. And what it does is it just absorbs everything else into dedicating it to servicing this ever-escalating sum of a falsified debt.
So what you're saying then is that we're sucked into the banking system whether we like it or whether we don't like it.
Right, right.
Okay.
And the reason is because this the effects of the obfuscation of the currency translate to every unit of the currency. As interest multiplies artificial indebtedness in proportion to a circulation, ever more of every unit of the circulation is dedicated to servicing artificial debt versus sustaining the industry which is obligated to do so. That means we can never let the fourth.
Let me see if I got this straight. Let's talk about the wealth of the economy as bathwater in the bath. And when you institute the current banking system that we have, it's equivalent to pulling the plug out. And the interest is like the Coriolis effects, circling the drain faster and faster and faster and faster until it just goes and sucked all down.
Pretty good analogy.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, the bathwater is very dirty.
So first thing we have to do is stick the plug back in the hole.
Some of us are less dirty than others.
How do we do that? We've got all the interest compiling.
We seize payments against all these debts, claiming the obfuscation of the currency as our defense.
That would be getting rid of
Hold on a second. I just need to say this here.
That would be essentially just taking out income tax entirely, because income tax doesn't go to building your roads or helping out the community or anything. It only goes to pay the interest to the debt on foreign banks.
That's right.
The mandate that I mentioned while we were offline, in fact, addresses that issue. It restricts government to one and one only method of taxation, which distributes the costs among those who consume of whatever government provides accordingly.
Taxation. Yes, I remember taxation.
Income tax is no longer legal, nor would be, for instance, inheritance tax. The issue is to stop the drain and to put the plug in. We actually do two things. We seize payments, okay. But we fulfill the obligation on the grounds that it's asserted to us by filing as a payment and a like irredeemable promise to pay. All right?
Okay, well, that's the logical way of doing it. But the problem is that these bankers don't just use pens. They also use guns and men who carry them in their stead.
No, the bankers don't.
Well, how do all these militaries get financed if the bankers ain't got a hand in them?
Well, those guys come and point a gun at us for paying our houses off with the same kind of a currency and the same obfuscation that the banking system claims as private citizens, which private citizens rightfully in no country of the world have any right or authority that other private citizens can't be granted, and that military deprives itself of paying for a home itself. You see? So the question is, the bankers don't come with those guns. Is the military going to serve the bankers, although the military is compelled to serve the people? Everyone who serves in the military in our country or from our country is compelled to take an oath, much akin to the very oath of office that the president takes. You see? They are obliged to uphold the Constitution. Now, there is no constitutional authority of the banking system to do this on any grounds whatsoever.
Well, of course, but the average soldier, the average jackbooted thugs who's roided up and got recruited from, prison or something along those lines. In fact, now what's happening is that, in fact, this was a story that we put up on Guerrilla Media not too long ago. Now, if you are in debt, like with a college, a loan and all of that kind of stuff, you can now be put into the military to pay off your debt.
Is that right? I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and,
okay.
And sure, and you're going to point a gun at somebody else who's not paying their debt when you know how criminal that system is.
Someday
we draw the line.
The debt slaves enforcing debt slaves. You know, this is the thing. We're going to be used to fight each other.
Vinny, that argument is only as valid as saying, well, you could never teach me to drive because I'll just turn off the road. You know, the question is, but why would you do that? And when we're asking that question, that's one thing. But when we have an absolute answer, that's another thing, you see.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing, too. All the soldiers that I know from the States, they're all great guys. You know, I don't see jackbooted, you know, thugs. What I see is a bunch of guys that are good guys. I like them. And most of them like me. So, but they've got a boss. You know, and they've got to be. And I think part of the deal with being a soldier is you've got to obey your boss, no matter what he says. I mean, if he says jump off that cliff, you've got to go do it.
That is part of the deal. But the other part of the deal is you have not only an obligation to your country, which overrides orders which go against an oath that you take. To be inducted into the service and to perform this service. There's also a huge obligation, moral obligation, to evaluate things which more seriously than the rest of us have to take them. And so you find in the military that people are, in fact, very often very enlightened. There's cases here, for instance, of people refusing to serve because of the birth certificate issue of Obama.
Funny you should say that, because I was born in Australia. I'm thinking of running for president in the U.S. What do you think? Would you vote for me, Mike, or not?
I don't know. Actually, I prefer somebody from Australia than someone from Kenya.
All right, let me talk about this Nuremberg thing. Now, in Nuremberg, a lot of the defense that these guys put up, the Nazis put up to say, you know, they shot people and what have you, they said that my supervisor, my boss, my military leader told me to shoot those 100 people. But that was no defense. They were then convicted of crimes against humanity. The point is that if you're in the military and your sergeant tells you to go over there and shoot those people or you know, take some kind of military action that's going to include getting people killed, where's the line? Where do you say, hey, I'm not going to shoot those children? And more than likely what would happen is that sergeant will pull out his sidearm and shoot you for disobeying. You understand what I'm saying?
That's right. You are. Let's not forget, of course, the most important point about the Nuremberg trials, that all the worst and most intelligent and high-up Nazi officials got exported to the United States under Operation Paperclip and got off scot-free. Okay? And it was all the patsies that were left behind to as a big show for the effing public to say, look, we caught all these war criminals. We're so effing humanitarian. When we make Wernher von Braun, the chief of the V-2 rocket program, the head of NASA. Okay? You know, it's just sick. It's a showboating, you know, kind of thing. And if we're going to apply principles, they have to be applied in full, you know. We can't dilly-dally around. And the problem is there are no real examples in history where you can point at it and go, that is a full example of principles being followed and everything being done, because there's always some kind of hidden hand or story that ain't being told by history. I'd like to thank you guys very much.
But are we forever to be hapless? Okay.
Oh, no, no. Well, the point I was just trying to make is it's a perennial problem. And if you want to make sure that principles actually happen, you have to make history yourself. You can't rely on it.
Amen.
All right. Okay. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Mike Montagna and Graham Kelly, thanks for coming on. We'll see you again sometime.
Vincent. See you later.
After the break, Kane and Hollywoods.
Black sunrise, black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know the way it's going to go. God, we can't see.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about not being able to see what's coming at you. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Check out our featured interviews page, including such fabulous guests as George Norrie and Webster Tarpley, G. Edward Griffin, Sherry Kane and Len Horowitz, Michael Murphy, the list goes on. It's just, we've had so many amazing guests on the show, can't believe it. And I'm joined by two very amazing guests in their own right as well. Still, Graham Kelly and Mike Montagna, the creator of the Mathematically Perfected Economy. Guys, welcome back from break. Now, we wanted to, well, me personally, when I earn money, the first thing that I'm consciously noticing is that there's a currency manipulation going on. Like, if I earn 100 US dollars and then now I translate it into New Zealand currency, New Zealand currency is trading high as heck against the American dollar right now, I basically feel like I'm losing out on money. And my prime sinister, John Key, a Merrill Lynch currency trader on the board of the Federal Reserve for 2 years, he made $50 million out of currency trading, and I find that I'm running at a loss. How could he make money out of it while everybody else winds up being effing destitute?
Well, the answer to that is simple. He just, you know, the what he's doing is betting on the disparity. So he's buying what's likely to rise in respect to the others and selling it before it falls. So that's how it's done. But the only thing
I think that's it's a bit of manipulation going on at the top end. So where they never lose no matter what happens. You know, that's what I believe. There's like 1% of the elites who are either banksters or politicians in bed with the banksters, which is a bad thought. And then there's all the rest of us normal people who are just victims of the entire system. I actually believe that. I totally, absolutely, 100% believe that. Vinny, I use an Irish company for alternative international conversions. You know, it's very fast, very cheap, and enables you to sell the currency at better than the, in fact, not only better than the bank rates, but you can actually beat the bank rates because somebody's selling currency that you want and you've got currency that you don't want, but they want your currency. In other words, there's a trade scenario happening. The company's called currencyfair.com. And you go there and let's say you've got $1,000 in New Zealand and you need $1,000 in the US for, say, you're buying something on eBay. What would then happen is that you go to currencyfair.com, you send them your $1,000 New Zealand and it shows up in a day or two. It's very fast. And then what you do is you look for the best rate in US dollars, and usually you can beat the banks. And not only beat the banks, but absolutely beat the banks. And it works out to be about a 10, anywhere between 3 to 10% saving. Currencyfair.com. I should actually work for the company, and they should give me a commission, shouldn't they? But anyway, I'm just sharing that with you because it works for me.
Well, the consequence of it is that you make poor, some other poor sap in some other country the victim of.
No, you don't, because the other poor sap that you're talking about is the guy that wants to sell. He wants to buy New Zealand dollars. And you want to buy US dollars. So then you and he, it's free market, perfect free market scenario. He's not a sap. The buyer's not a sap and the seller's not a sap. But the seller needs 1,000 New Zealand dollars and the buyer needs the equivalent of that in US dollars. So they come to an agreement. It's called a trade.
Those people come to an agreement, but the effect of the agreement is somebody like Vinny has been paid in one currency, and then as it's falling in respect to the one he desires to convert it to, he has a loss. So that's
hang on for a minute, but he'll lose a whole lot more if he uses Bank of New Zealand or that the absolute lowest of the low banks in New Zealand called Kiwi Bank. You don't want to be dealing with Kiwi Bank. They're just bad. So, and I can prove it. But anyway, that's another subject.
Well, you're just saying that because they're not owned, because they're not owned by Australia like every other bank in New Zealand, including the Bank of New Zealand.
There's one thing that Kiwi Bank do claim that these other banks are owned by Australian. But to tell you the truth, I don't think they're worse than any other banks. I think they're just incompetent rather than complicit. If you understand what I'm saying, but I know that Kiwi Bank is complicit. That's owned by the government.
Well, there's generally a combination of the two, you know, right. Complicity and right.
Anyway, the point is that if Vinny uses Bank of New Zealand and Kiwi Bank to do the transfers, he's going to be anywhere between $30 and $60 worse off if he uses the banking system as opposed to using currencyfair.com. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, except that, you know, that's not a solution. You're just trying not to pay the prices steeply within the present system. Which,
well, isn't that a good thing? I mean, Mike, but isn't that a good thing? We live in the real world, and if he wants to transfer...
If you gave me a question right now of doing one or two things, mastering that system or adopting mathematically perfected economy by morning, I would choose the latter.
Then the issue
would go away, and trading at a profit without producing anything would go away as well.
I don't understand the mathematically perfected economy. So I haven't read it, and I haven't read the theory about it, so I'm kind of jumping in deep water here. But I do know that Vinny has this desire to get paid $1,000. So, and he gets, say, $1,000. Let's say one of the listeners decides to support Vinny to the tune of $1,000 and says, I've got $1,000, here it is. So what Vinny would do is say...
Well, I understand the principle of what you're saying, you know. He's going to make a conversion. The bank is going to charge him something.
Well, hang on. The bank's not involved. Okay, the bank's not involved because it bypasses the banks. That's the whole point. Currency Fair bypasses the banking system. The only time they ever use the banking system is to deliver the equivalent of $1,000 in New Zealand dollars to Vinny's account in New Zealand. I think the fee for that is $4 for Vinny.
Right, but it's still dependent on the banking currency, which has all of the banking.
That was my point, is that the currencies are kind of like floated, and they're all artificially inflated all up. So, like, the yuan is not anywhere near where it should be. The US dollar is not anywhere near where it should be. Neither is the New Zealand dollar, and neither is the pound sterling or the euro. It's all manipulated currency.
And a further truth about every currency you've just mentioned, and every other one as well, subject to this obfuscation of the currency, is that they're all plummeting in value.
And we all know that. Like, they still got to live in the real world. And we've got to buy milk, and we've got to buy bread, and we've got to pay the school fees.
We make the world, real world, what it is. We make the world what it is by complicity ourselves, or we change it. And that's what I'm advocating.
Well, I'm advocating change also, but mine is, as I said, I'm disadvantaged, and I don't wish to, decry your, the mathematically perfected economy per se, because I don't know what it is. I'm going to go research it after we finish off today, and then I'll get some understanding of it. But in any case, the bottom line is a $60 saving on a $1,000 transaction is always better in your pocket than somebody else's pocket from a practical point of view. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, yeah, that was the other thing that really struck me, is that there's two solutions to currency manipulation. One is the theoretical and the other is the practical, like the what do we want to have done eventually and what do we have to do right now in order to protect our wealth?
Well, you could delineate them in along such lines, but... You know, practical is what you're saying has just been described, whereas if we persisted in this practice or behavior ourselves for even some short while and the system and it collapsed entirely, what we're left in the end is a worthless currency.
But hang on, Mike, the system is all over collapsing already now. So what I have is gold and silver, but that's not perfect. It's not a perfect model. But we've still got to buy milk and bread for the kids, and the family got to buy meat and lamb. And we eat lobster over here too. Vinny, you've got to come over and have dinner with us. But the thing of it is we've got to use some kind of currency in the meantime. and not knowing what the mathematically perfected economy is, and understanding that I've been in the exchange business for 11 years, and being practical, I've got to feed my kids and my, you know, the wife wants a, you know, whatever, and all of that costs money, and the kids want cars and houses, and my grandchildren now want cars. The other thing is that you've got to be practical. You can't be coming up with a theory that doesn't, like, the theories are all well and good, and I'm going to go study yours. But the you know, today I've got to get the food on the table. You know what I'm saying? And with this currencyfair.com, it enables
well,
me to
let's just evaluate what the course is that you prescribed,
sure,
starting back 43 years ago with this what you're calling a theory of mathematically perfected.
Oh, look, I'm not bagging it. I just don't know.
No. But generally, people do seem to think that something that is theoretical is often impractical. And the reason for that,
will it put food on the table today, and will it fill my car with gas? That's all I want to know.
What's happened is that persisting in the course we've persisted in for 43 years is now jeopardizing your chance of putting food on the table, even with all the gold you might have socked away. You see?
Well, actually,
is for us to master the issues, understand what the solution is, and act on it, not to screw around.
I have a problem where I need to pay my electrical bill, I've got to pay my gas bill, as in, you know, gas for the house, cooking gas.
And you're saying it's practical to just go on trying to beat each other to the punch and make a few pennies here or bucks here or whatever, you know, above each other and all, whereas it would be far less effort to just adopt solutions.
Actually, I'm prepared to do that effort to feed my family and fill the car with petrol and, you know, and do what I need to do. Incidentally, talking about petrol, my HHO kit arrived from the US today, and I'm going to be installing that, Vinny, with the idea of saving hopefully some money on my fuel bill. You know, here petrol is, in Australia, we're looking at $6 or $7 a gallon US equivalent. So I don't know what people are complaining about in the US about. I think it's even more expensive in the UK. What's the gas price?
Well, you know the whole thing about the more income you have or the cheaper things are, the more you wind up using. It's very true with internet. If you increase people's internet speed, it doesn't mean they use the internet less. They actually wind up using it more and doing more with it. Same thing with gas prices being low in the United States. Everybody in the United States can drive around heaps and heaps and heaps because it's cheap. But the second any price increase goes down, it threatens their entire economy because they've been built up to the point where their infrastructure revolves around people being able to drive
The great threat about fuel prices is, no matter where you are in the world, the prices generally reach a level which is the most that the subject people can afford. And so since we become dependent on fuel for transportation in particular, but also for power consumption, what happens is when the prices rise above that, this jeopardizes our financial capacity to afford persisting in the way of life that we need to continue even affording, for instance, just getting ourselves to our jobs and home. You know, so this in turn jeopardizes our ability to afford our mortgages and all the other things that we've committed to. It raises the cost of food because food gets where it is by transportation. It's one of the most expensive aspects of putting food on the table. So being as the prices have sought the most we can afford prior to an escalation, which may be artificial, then, you know, this puts us all in jeopardy. So regardless of what the prices are in the UK or the United States or Australia or New Zealand or Canada or China and Europe and whatever, you know, when they go up so substantially in a short period of time, this puts us at great risk. So,
yes,
while they may not be here so much as, you know, they are elsewhere, they're close to it, and they're the most that we can afford here. You're seeing very little travel. You can travel across state after state after state, and every motel you pass will have an empty parking lot. There will be one car there, and that is the only person that is working at that motel anymore.
Do you know why? I recently stayed in Dallas, and a few years ago. And the hotel was empty. I was the only guest. They had 50 rooms, and I was the only guy there. And they completely had this staff on for me. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I couldn't believe it. Dallas had changed since I was last there, for sure. Right. I love the States. I love living there, but I don't live there now on purpose. I don't even go to Honolulu, and I want to go to Honolulu, but I don't even go anymore. Because it's last time I went into Honolulu, actually, I was harassed by the TSA, so that was a bad thing.
Oh, welcome to America. Would you like us to cradle the balls? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's all about cradling the balls. We'll be right back, folks.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I've been everywhere, man. I've been to the Federal Reserve over there, man, and into the IMF over here, man, and basically it's corruption everywhere, man. You'll listen
to that song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's also, incidentally, the chemtrail theme song.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
There's actually a law over here that mandates that it has to be printed in the inside of every outhouse as well.
Yeah.
Outhouse as in toilet?
Yeah, huh? Well, I suppose Johnny Cash rules.
Well, I have actually been everywhere. My wife and I, in the last 11 years, we've been in about 40 countries. And I've discovered that the same problem is all over those 40 countries, which they all need better money. I think eGold had that as a logo years ago before the government, the US government actually took the eGold company over. So, you know, they did have better money. It was called gold. So, and when they closed down in 2020.
In terms of like scamming and stuff of that nature, I mean, are there fraudsters out there who are trying to like get people into gold trading and all of that kind of stuff? I mean, what's all the behind the curtain stuff that people don't see?
Well, basically, everybody's definitely fraudsters out there. Sorry, Mike, do you want to talk?
No, I was just going to say exactly. Definitely, there's fraudsters out there. You know, when Paul ran out there, okay. In 2008, a bunch of his buddies went to jail who were, you know, and got closed down who were printing currency.
Well, I think Max Kaiser was talking about, remember there was the savings and loan scandal. When was that, Mike? What year was that in the U.S.?
Oh, there's been a number of savings and loan scandals. There were savings and loan scandals in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, you know.
It's perennial.
Yeah.
Actually, you'd think we'd all take a clue, you know. We'd all get a message. I mean,
So that's the point. That's the point. Scams do go on. Here's the better point. How do you avoid them? How do you figure out and identify which ones are the scams?
Number one, if you're not holding the gold that you bought, it's likely a scam.
Let me tell you something. Our customers, I've got 180,000 customers, and they ain't holding the gold and silver that we sold them. So where is the gold and silver? And it's definitely not a scam. So where's the gold and silver that our customers hold? If they haven't got it in their hands, where is it?
Well,
it's locked away somewhere safe and secure, like Fort Knox, where only people from the IMF can get it.
I think the larger amount may be locked away in the Federal Reserve Bank of New York as well, which holds gold for many foreign countries.
Okay, well, our customers' gold and silver is in six countries in private names. So we hide it. In six countries. So the object of the exercise is to make it not accessible by illegitimate crooks or legitimate crooks. You know what I'm talking about. So
there was a difference.
There's a difference. There's an authorized thievery and there's a disorganized, well, unorganized. No, that's not right.
One uses a suit and a smart bomb, and the other one uses a suit and a cell phone.
Well, the bottom line is that crooks and thieves are, you know, easily dealt with. It's easy to identify whether or not somebody online that you want to do business with is a crook or a thief. Using Google, it takes about, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds. That's what Google's for. You know, I don't particularly, you know, I use other search engines as well. Google's good, but it's easy to find out whether somebody wants to defraud you. You just look at the model that they're offering and just say, I'm not going to go down that route. Recently, I had a customer in Australia who phished an account and sent me a big lot of money to one of my bank accounts and said, give me gold. So I'm looking at this, and it took me 15 seconds to identify that person that sent me the money wasn't the owner of the account where the money came from. So I just said to him, incidentally, my son lives in, it was in Sydney. I said, my son lives in Sydney, a couple of doors down from you. I just need to get some ID. I'll send him down to see you. The guy used a real address, and when my son went and knocked on the door, that guy was unheard of. So I just sat on the money. I knew it was going to be going back because the bank was going to ring me eventually and say, can we have that money back? By the way, they have to get my permission to take money out. That's how we work here. And it was $5,000. The guy sent me $5,000, it turned out that the some guy had broken into this guy's house, found his bank account details, sent me $5,000 online and said, give me $5,000 worth of gold or silver or whatever it was. And I just sat on the money. I said, sorry, I can't verify you because I need verification. I need to visit with you. And if I don't have my son next door, I then send a private investigator. So it's not anything to do with war on drugs. It's not anything to do with anything of like that. We just want to verify our customers so we know that the money that we received is legitimately coming from the customer. And we've had 11 years of experience and, you know, it's not a problem. It's easy to find out whether, there's fraudsters. Recently I had a guy in Amsterdam who ordered some gold and he told me via email that he's going to buy marijuana with it. And I went, holy God in heaven, But he said to me,
it must have been a particular strain called Acapulco Gold, but go ahead.
Now, I don't smoke marijuana. I used to when I was as a young man, but I don't anymore. But I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's buying marijuana with that gold he's buying. But actually, in actual fact, it's legal in his country. So it's now becoming more legal around the world in various countries to some degrees. And eventually, in my opinion, is it shouldn't be regulated or criminalized at all. Part of the problem is that these drugs are criminalized, the point is it should be free enterprise. If people want to buy marijuana, then they should be able to do that. You know, I don't want to, and probably you don't want to, Vincent, and you don't, Mike, maybe. Maybe you do, I don't know. But the end result is if you want to buy marijuana, there shouldn't be a law against it. And not only that, it should be unregulated. And it's really annoying to me that the governments take a tax out of booze and cigarettes and then tell us it's
right, and that they're proposing they will flirt with legalizing it if, you know, it's subject to a tax. You know, they just got to get something for giving us our rights, you know. Right.
It's all it's give and take, but the reality is it is give and take. We give and they take.
It's like that old mind over matter,
You don't mind and we don't matter.
No, we don't mind and you don't matter.
Well, that's the way it should be, That's the way people should think about their government and then their politicians, whatever. It's like, bro, you don't mind and we don't matter is what you reckon. But the reality is we matter and we don't mind what happens to you because you're a piece of fucking filth scumbaggery.
Yeah.
My country.
Ruling out all the pieces of filth out of our life is the real issue here. And when it comes down to it, you can take like this and marijuana, for instance, is if you conceive of it as a crime against you somehow, what you're really after is conformative behavior. Because you don't understand that it may not be a threat to you at all, but certainly some guy sitting on the side of a hill somewhere, smoking a joint, watching the sunset, isn't hurting you, But when you criminalize it...
Oh, my God, he's got pot! Small amount of pot! Get the batons out! Crack him over the head! The hands are dangerous! Look at those dreadlocks swaying in the breeze!
The thing is, though, when you criminalize it, you enable a huge amount of other crimes. So people start growing it secretly. Exactly. And then the next thing you know, you've got gangs in the neighborhood who come around at harvest time and break into people's houses and their yards. And the next thing you know, you've got even, narcotics agencies purportedly enforcing laws who break into houses, which they haven't acquired lawful means to investigate, but they point an infrared gun at somebody's house who's completely harmless person, and they go there and they not only take all their plants and take $250,000 of cash that might be out of the house, but they report that they found $50,000 worth of cash. And so you have crimes of a huge scale when you criminalize something, which needs to be carefully evaluated whether it should be a crime at all. But it comes back to what you were saying earlier, though. A principle is a principle, and you have to decide these matters on the principles.
Let me tell you something, too.
Hold on a sec, Graham. We're coming up to the end of the show here now. I just wanted to add that, we're talking about currency and money, and now it's gone on to the war on drugs. And I think that, times with, I think it's something like, weed will get you through times of no money, better than money will get you through times of no weed.
That's very deep, isn't
it?
Very deep.
That's really deep, yeah.
I think the people who smoke dope are crazy, but it's their right. I'll fight for the right for them to do that. You understand? Anyway, that's how I feel about it.
Well, that's right. That's right.
We should all have the right to our own madness, and thank you very much, guys, for sharing yours with me today. We'll be back next week, ladies and gentlemen, with more of the lighter side of genocide. My guests today have been Graham Kelly from GoldNow.com.